Why is it called a long john?
I was going to
call it. Oh, because you have short johns.
Just your johns? Wait, what's a short john?
I guess just underwear.
Your skivvies?
Your skivvies. Your johnnies.
Your johnnies. That's, no one has ever called them that.
Hey, this is Amrita and Andrew. We're on a podcast journey to find our way through freelance life. If you're thinking about taking a leap off the beaten path in any part of your life, our inexpert advice is, don't think twice.
I just wanted you to know, like, you can kind of see there's like this sort of green, light green dust film.
Pistachio dust.
It looks kind of like either like pollen or something. It's all over everything, and I'm trying to clean it up. But the problem is that it's meant to become a paste. So once, if you add water to it,
it's just going
to
get worse.
Impossible. So I'm trying to like dust it. I think I just have to like.
I think dust and vacuum
everything.
Vacuum your like 100 square foot apartment.
Oh, I know, which I do know. This is one of the many ways in which you've had a very positive influence on my life.
What, vacuuming?
Yeah, which is such a hobby for you. That we have a friend who will be like, hey, Andrew, like, how's vacuuming going sometimes when we hang out?
Yeah, it's a thing.
It's something you're
famous
for, yeah. So I think it's useful to understand that when all the products that were in this quote-unquote care package are mostly to, like, remedy certain like deficiencies, like basically it's like, oh,
character deficiency.
Like your skin is looking really terrible, so I sent this like paste, this Ayurvedic paste that they got, and this is, you know, they recently went to India, my parents, that you apply on your skin at night, and it will really help like how terrible your face has been looking, and then
that's nice.
Yeah, and I think that this powder is meant to, she's like, oh, you know, like for people who have really sad thinning hair, you know, like pregnant pause. This can help. But so I think this is also something that like people without an Indian mom might not really understand the dynamic of being like, here's a care package fixed full of all these things to fix like everything about your hideous appearance, but then also accompanied by a card that says, you're what happens when a mother wishes upon a star. And because both of those things can be true. One of the packets unfortunately exploded everywhere. So
the packet for your face?
I think this was the hair. I think it's like a powder that you then mix with enough water to make it in a paste and then like apply it onto your scalp. But it is like a very ghastly shade of green. And the other thing about all this Ayurvedic stuff is that they do not have requirements about listing
the ingredients.
The ingredients. So, if you go and you read the ingredients, it's like a bunch of stuff, which I like don't know what most of it is, and I asked for translations on some of them, and then it'll be like, at the end of the list, will just be like, et cetera. And I'm like, see, that's the part that I'm worried about. I'm worried about the et cetera. Is there like, is there like, you know, gasoline in here? Is there like we don't know.
I mean, you'll never know, but. If it works.
Never know until you try, I guess.
If it works.
So either all my hair is going to fall out and turn green, or I'm going to have like beautiful lustrous hair the next time you see me. So just.
And skin. I'm excited about the skin. I know, me too. Since you broke your expensive face serum.
Oh my God. Yeah. So, yes. Well, it's not a good story. That's the story.
That's the story.
This is the story. I bought like the most expensive face serum on earth. And then
it's such a thing to do, I got to say.
Really? That's like such a sad statement.
Well, it's like you bought this very expensive thing first, and then you coveted it to so that like you only used
a tiny amount. Drop.
Mm-hmm. And well, this is what really I'm really about it. You're like, okay, I bought this thing and it's supposed to help these like spots on my face, and it's really expensive, but I'm just gonna use a little bit, and like, and I need to use it consistently. Cut to the next time I've seen you, you're like, I mean, I've used it like, I don't know, like 4 out of 7 days. And I'm like, yeah, but if you don't use it consistently, you're not going to see the results. And if you don't use enough, you're not going to see the results.
Both, those are things that are both true and so true about me. I do.
And then
I do that.
You're like, and then you drop the thing.
Yeah. I dropped it in the sink with my slippery, soapy hands, and it was in a tiny glass bottle because this is how fancy this serum is. It comes in like a delicate, tiny tiny glass bottle, and it shattered, and there were shards of glass in there, and I just scooped up everything that was in the sink. I saved what I could salvage, and then I into a different bottle, and then everything that else that was in the sink, I just slathered all over my face. And then I saw you that day, and I was like, all like,
you looked beautiful, shiny,
greasy with serum. I've never been more moisturized than I was.
I noticed a difference.
Yeah. Actually, you did. You brought it up without prompting. Yeah. So maybe it turns out that I just need to like
slather my face. $75 bottle.
$75 bottle serum. Oh God. Well, anyway, I think I'm gonna buy it again, and I'm gonna give it the college try this time. I really have, you know, I gotta invest.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm really beating my seasonal depression this year. Like, I'm not like mired in sadness.
Yeah.
But then I realized that actually it's manifesting as me just not being able to get out of bed before 11 in the morning. And I just wake up, and then I'm like, I'm fine. And then I just get back under the covers and just stay there for hours. And my brain is so good at being like stupid that I was fooled for a while into thinking that, oh, seasonal depression missed me this year. And so I thought, you know what, maybe I've kicked it. And then I suddenly like realized, oh, for the past like 2 weeks, I've like been in bed as long as I can be, you know, the maximum right. amount. So if I know I can stay in bed until noon, or like, even if I know I can't, I just will.
Work from your bed.
Yeah, just kind of like laptop on my belly, or like, you know, taking a call like with my face all smushed on the pillow. So that, folks, is also depression. It's just manifesting like physically more than what's the solution? Well, I don't know what it is. Maybe we need to, like, I mentioned to you, maybe also just being more scheduled about our
work days,
because we're doing so much more self-directed work.
Yeah,
this month.
But at the same time, I feel like we don't really hit our stride until like,
I know,
later in the day. I and know. Then we can go
there
later.
There was like a dumb you know how like New York Times has those like really smug, dumb like lifestyle columns about like how to like quote unquote live a better life. So they had this article about how people with different circadian rhythms can get along in the office. And I actually genuinely like want to know the answer to this question. Like, I need, like, I mean, I don't know if there is an answer to this question, I guess. And I mean, I think the actual answer is that we, the non-morning people, are oppressed by the structure of the work
by
day.
The industrial revolution.
Because like the day is not structured to take best advantage of our,
yeah,
you know, our strengths. But yeah, they didn't give as much of like a really concrete answer as I really wanted. I wanted them to actually try to solve this problem for me, but really it was just like, oh, like be mindful like of when you schedule things and
yeah, of course, how you're not going to offer like real solutions.
Like, I mean, this is,
well, I mean, one thing, like I why do we all have to get into the office at the same time? If you and I don't get going until noon, mm-hmm. why are we there before noon?
Right.
Just
or you start a business with your friend who has the same circadian issues as you, and then you and me have been doing we've been doing a lot of self-directed work lately. Yes. And keeping a very sort of us type of schedule, which mm-hmm. actually has been working very well, because I feel like we're, you know, if we meet up at 9 a.m, we're going to spend a bunch of time just kind of like revving, you know. And whereas if we meet up at noon, or we meet mm-hmm. up at 1, like we're ready to go, I mean, yep. more or less.
Yeah.
And can just like actually get into it, and then, you know, and then we work basically until like, you know,
happy. Right.
No, yeah. it's just way more efficient is what it is. And even if it like maybe ultimately ends up being like slightly fewer hours, they're just much better spent hours, right. I think.
Well, we also come with thoughts about what we're going to work on for the day, right. Or you know, we've already taken the alone time to think about what our
like how what's going to be the are, most what's going to be the best use of our together
about
time
about this, and we should do that,
right,
this and that,
right, which also helps to have a cohort of two. We have to, there's so little consensus building time for us. We waste very little time on, you know, death by committee, which is like the biggest waste of time at most of our other workplaces, you know.
And we don't always agree on everything either, so it's not like a
well, and that has been, as I said, something that's been really fun about a lot of our work lately. I mean, fun, but like illuminating is how we function when we don't agree on an approach to something, and how we can, like, how we just sort of like have to then like reverse the reverse out of the spot and then try to parallel park again in a different way.
That's really what it feels like
over and over again. And being on a deadline with creative work makes it so much more that you just kind of have to do that instead of instead of being like, oh well, you know, we'll just put this aside.
Let's think about it and return to it,
which is what we've done quite a lot in the past. And now it's kind of like, no, actually, you'll think about it now.
I'm like, I don't want to think about it.
Yeah. But here we are. I feel a lot of jealousy about your life right now, although I know that that's dumb and I shouldn't. But I just feel like your time is your own right now.
Okay, yes, it is. It is. But that also means what it means.
It means that you're left alone with your thoughts quite a lot.
I really am. Mm-hmm.
Well, you now are experiencing solo living for, if not the first time, then the first time since I've known you.
Yeah, I mean, I lived solo when I was in high school for a minute.
And oh, yes, that's right. But under very
very different circumstances, very depressing circumstances,
yes,
really.
Yes.
But yeah, so this is the very first time. So my full adult life.
We're both getting to experience that together, actually.
And
I mean, alone together. Together alone.
It's a gift. I mean, my apartment is also nice and large.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you have a lot of different spaces.
I have a lot of different spaces.
In, and you can sit at a dining room.
I can play
table.
My piano at any time of the day or night. I can sing and play at any time of the day or night. So, you know, that.
Oh, that's nice.
It's really nice.
Yeah. How's your voice been feeling?
I mean, it's there. And I enjoy playing every day.
Yes. Yeah, you got so uncomfortable with that question. You just started seizing up. Okay. Anyway, you're alone with your thoughts quite a bit. We don't have, you know, other people's projects to consume our working time, so we're just kind of left.
No drama, no other people's, like,
these are good things. These are
they're great things. Like, I, you know, don't have to.
Yeah. So anyway, so I feel like I'm envious in the time that I do spend doing other work, but I know that it's actually not like so idyllic sometimes to be, you know. 100%
untethered
and like especially for a, you know, double Capricorn like you, who is
it's been good in a few ways
productivity worries.
One of them is realizing it doesn't matter how I structure my day, I will always feel like I didn't do something I should have done. I will always feel like I woke up too late or got up too or didn't get enough sleep and should have slept longer or like any or should have eaten right when I got up and not an hour after I got up or 2 hours after I got up, and I should have done this and I should have had more water and I should have gone to the gym in the morning instead of it, like, just endless ways
to self edit your day,
and I should have taken the day to do this instead of that. Yeah, so it's like endless ways. And so having so much open
unstructured time
has given me the chance to like think about that and
kind of examine that
tendency. You know what, like, why, like, I'm just after this It's like I have a need to feel guilty about something.
See, that's what it really is, because the answer isn't that there would be like a perfect type of day that you're chasing. Like, you're like, what would make you feel not that way? Is it if you were like, you set your clock for the exact right time and you fell asleep at the right time, you woke up at the right time, you had the right amount of water? Like, there's no way to actually like game the system on this one. Mm-mm. So it's really not that you're chasing the perfect day. It's just that you're chasing a reason to make yourself feel guilty.
And there's nobody.
Because there's no external source to like give you the framework to feel guilty, so you have to make it yourself.
And there's no framework to be, you know, if I worked a job and I accidentally got, you know, I got in late or I didn't get enough sleep or whatever, mm-hmm. but then I got like my job done and I did it well. And then it's like at least there's the external validation of like. Yeah. There was a thing that needed to get done, and you did it. Well, I guess it's a double-edged thing. And you did it well.
You don't get the external source of like censure, but you also don't get the external sense of validation.
Yeah. So it's all just
in your head.
But I feel pretty good. I'm able to like see what's happening mm-hmm. more and more. And you and I have talked about working on the professional time we have together, yes. and like figuring out how to manage our schedule in, mm-hmm. in a way that's best for us.
Yeah.
We haven't quite figured that out yet.
A work in progress.
And it's a work in progress and something I don't want to feel guilty about.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No guilt. Here we are doing the thing.
My cousin's daughter, Savannah, uh-huh. she plays saxophone. And
oh,
she's
does she?
Auditioning for the jazz band. And she's really nervous. So
sorry, almonds were terrible.
So she's auditioning for the jazz band. And so my cousin Nicole texted me, asked me, like, what is your, do you have any, like, tips for preparing for the audition?
Uh-huh. Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
Just, you know, one performer to another.
So I was thinking about mm-hmm. it. Like, how do you, you know, how do you prepare for a jazz audition where there's, like, improv? Like, you're going to improvise or something. So this is what I decided. This was my advice.
Okay.
How old is she?
Middle school?
She is in middle school. Okay. Eighth grade. Okay. Nicole said, oh, there's a backing track. She's listening to like a backing track on YouTube, just sort of like a thing. And mm-hmm. I said, great. So to practice improv, I told her to come up with like a 3 to 5 note like
pattern,
little pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And then to play that over the backing track until she felt comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. Don't change it at all. Mm-hmm. Just like play it. And then when she felt comfortable with it, she needed to like start playing around with it. So change one note. Or change the length of the note.
Uh-huh.
Or change the rhythm just a little bit. So play the same notes, but just a little different rhythm. And then go back and play. And then follow it by just playing the original.
Uh-huh.
Little 5 note. And then do it again. And then if ever. And then start to just play off of that same 3 to 5 note thing. And then if you ever feel like you're lost, just play the
Go back to the thing. The thing that you prepared. Right.
Yeah. So.
That's actually really good advice. And is very similar to the advice that I haven't really been as in touch with my like vocal training but in Indian classical music, like, there's, you know, a lot of vocal improvisation
mm-hmm.
and that sounds a lot actually like that it's okay to sort of prepare a few figures that you like, and you know, and then just kind of like, and you can take a really long time and just kind of like riff on
mm-hmm.
those, and only, you know, maybe only use 2 notes
yep.
or only use 3, and then like as you like feel like you've exhausted all the combinations of those 3 with different lengths of the note and different like rhythms and different whatever, and like pausing
and punctuation
whatever, and then you can add one more, and then you can, you know, whatever. So I think you gave good advice.
Yeah, well, her audition's today, so I'll be curious to know how she did.
Oh, well, I'm sure she did great. That's really cute.
Yeah.
I would be terrified to do an audition where there was an improvised element, because it's so about like being present and not being nervous and stuff. And it's like sort of the exact opposite setting to be in.
So I would think that I would feel the same way, but I feel the opposite. Mm. I feel like an audition that would have improvisation, I would feel more confident.
Because there's like no wrong way to do it, basically.
Because all those people who spent all those hours just like chipping away at their pieces perfectly have no advantage over me.
Interesting. Well, you also like have like a sort of surprising, like, not maybe not surprising, but like your performance anxiety. Well, you don't really have performance anxiety. You have it in a very different format.
Oh, tell me.
What? You do. You tend to get much more like, you know, I don't even know if it's anxious. You're like, you get very terse and very like a little snappy, like in the preamble.
Yes.
And then once you're in it, you're on, the train is good as rolling and it doesn't matter. And like, you're like totally there in the moment and whatever. Like mine is much more like a traditional performance anxiety where like get up there and then everything that I thought I knew, like maybe.
Really? You feel like in the moment?
Sometimes, yeah, it just flies out of my mind, or I'm like, where am I? Or I'm like totally not in my body right now or whatever. Well, I've been on a whole journey of self-discovery this 2020 so far. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is like, realizing how like intertwined some of my various different goals are, including like mindfulness and being present and whatever. And so yeah, I think in performance sometimes I'm just like, you know, I will sort of try to revert back to whatever I practiced and try to like and chipped away at and prepared and whatever, rather than like actually just like being in the room in that moment and like,
well, for a long
which
time
is, like,
I think
a
I,
detriment
yes
as a performer.
Well, for a long time, I mean in college and shit, I tried to do that, just emulate other people, which seemed like very comfortable. Like their process was different than mine, and it just didn't seem like they had nerves or they were, or however they prepared. But I do that. I do the thing where like I don't want to talk to people. Mm-hmm. Like I withdraw completely, and it's like, because I'm just like amping myself up. I'm like gathering all my energy.
Yeah.
Because I know where I want to expend my energy, and it's not in the preamble.
Right.
So I do everything I can to like disengage from like things. And so I get really terse when I have to like deal with, like make decisions or like deal with something.
Well, see, I know that about you, and it like, so I'm, you know, it doesn't concern me, and I'm not like, you know,
yeah,
like I know exactly what's going on when you go to that place. But yeah, you totally switch into like a different.
I'm like reserving all of my everything
or energy. Social energy or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think it is kind of like a social energy thing too, because then you're never more like socially engaged than when you are like communicating on stage or something. So it's like you're like, well, I can't actually like talk to you in the meantime.
It's true.
Yeah.
Oh, and then afterwards, I'm really tired.
Yeah, that all makes sense.
Yeah.
We need to get back to our. What was that?
That was my water bottle.
Oh, okay. That makes me miss our doing our live performances.
Mm-hmm. we'll get back there.
Which are gonna return?
Yes.
They're definitely returning.
We're in the works.
Very exciting. Drinking out of one of my niece mugs
kids,
right
kids
now.
Kids are funny.
They are funny, aren't they? my nieces have this thing about making mugs for me.
I know.
That's like
every day I'm over here, I drink out of a different one.
Mug. Yeah, that has their faces on it. It's nice.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have a small apartment though.
I have a small apartment with a
soon it's just gonna be
probably large coffee cup collection. I'm overrun.
And I mean, these cups are. They have some very cute kids.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
So you have a brand new nephew.
Brand new nephew, fresh into the world, 2 weeks old. Mm-hmm. Nicholas.
Sparks.
Yeah, Nicholas Sparks. I'm going to see him in a couple
huge
weeks.
Huge fan of his work.
It's very impressive that, you know, he
prolific.
Prolific. Mm-hmm. Nicholas something. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the middle name. Stevens. Mm-hmm. Nick Stevens.
Nick Stevens.
word is he might be a redhead or Ooh. Close to that.
Okay, that's exciting.
Yeah, which has my brother uneasy.
Wait, what? Why?
He just texted me. He's like, I think he has red hair. I don't know how I feel about that.
I have questions about that. I told you a little bit. I was yesterday at a fundraising event, and was thinking about, like, so I've had a lot of complaints about balancing my professional lives and my creative lives lately.
And a lot of I've complained a lot. People haven't come to you and complained about you.
Mean, I'm sure they have.
They complained to me about you, but they don't complain to you about you.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, I'm sure that I'm docking up lots of. Lots of
Can she not get out of bed and do something?
Oh my god, it's such a problem.
I say
it's such a problem.
Take it up with her.
Well, I'm sure they will in good time, but in the meantime I've had a lot of complaints about my work life. The thing that I often fail to appreciate and often need to be reminded is that how like timely some of the things are that I'm doing professionally that I think of as being like professional obligations that are separate from my creative life.
Right.
And I was just thinking about what makes somebody good at being like a fundraiser. Like, so we were at a donor event and I was trying to view this as an opportunity. We may soon be in a position to be fundraising for various different creative projects that we're doing. We have a short film that we're writing and we'll hope to self-produce and we'll need to self-finance presumably, and I was like, well, you know, maybe this is actually like a really good gift that I can try to think about as an opportunity to figure out how to get better at this.
But there are some people who are
gifted, I mean
very
truly,
gifted
truly, and it's and for people who are gifted that way, they don't understand what the block is for me. So I was like, okay, so I'm going to really try to, like, make this, like, I'm just going to try to, like, observe what makes people good at it, what makes me not feel like I'm not good at it.
So what have you gleaned?
What I gleaned is that I will have spurts of energy and then, like, you know, make a short turn around the room and, like, be very charming and, like, fire off a few like witty remarks and then have to retreat to the bathroom with my wine glass and just like hide so that I have like 5 full minutes where no one is talking to
you're
me.
Like your battery, you're like a game character, like
except
a video
it, like,
game
depletes
character.
Really fast and then, like recharge and then I go out and I'm like and then I have to go eat some cheese and like hide under a table somewhere. So progress is just shaky, but you know, it's, I don't know.
Well, okay.
Do you have any thoughts about
this? I do have thoughts. Well, not only do I have thoughts about this, but it kind of dovetails in something I wanted to talk to you about.
In general.
And we can cut this from the podcast if we want to, but.
You always preface everything you say, by the way, with that. And then I always just leave it in. So anyway, carry on.
How do I say this? So this goes without saying. Everyone is at their most dynamic when they are being themselves.
Yes.
So that being understood, sometimes in meeting situations, if we are meeting as a team together, I sense
I'm feeling that I'm about to be read for film.
Like a conservatism that like isn't your true personality, and it's fine because you're smart and articulate, so that works for you. So in other words, you're not just like a bump on a log, but you are also not your most effervescent self.
Okay.
And
I don't disagree with anything you've said so far, so I'm
wondering why
and
that's
how?
Purposeful if that's purposeful and like if it's like not a tactic so much as just like you're like gauging the situation before you fully come out.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it's sort of a little bit of a safety mechanism. Or what? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's very fair. I think that is very fair, not even criticism, just observation. I mean, we saw it in a lot of ways. And we actually had an entire, last year, had a very long conversation about a photo shoot that we did last year. Mm-hmm. And then we recently had another photo shoot. And mm-hmm. basically, I have the same feelings about it this time, which is that in the same way that, you know, well, first of all, my face is truly grotesque. In like, and I just don't know how to not look like that. This is just a sidebar to this. I will return to your very incisive question, but I think it's sort of a little bit related. It's like not really bringing my person. Like you were like, this doesn't look like you, and it's because I didn't really feel like I wasn't really like.
And it doesn't look like you,
Which is very kind because I really hope that that's not.
Well, kind or not, it's just a fact.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Like I mean, I don't know what was going on. I mean, I really look like yeah. Anyway. All that aside, it's about sort of not bringing my full dynamic range of personality to a situation, whether it is being seen by a camera or being seen by a person or whatever. I don't know fully the answer to your question. And I will say that I think this goes a little bit along with my my journey of 2020 self-discovery that I'm doing some hard self-examination.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes in a business setting, like a business meeting setting, I will tend to go a bit middle of the road. And again, it's not like I'm
well, I think that's appropriate.
Fully withdrawn and yes and no, because I think like even in a business setting, especially like in the creative industry and you know in the TV industry that we're you know mm-hmm. working really hard to make inroads into, people want to know who you are, so they want to know that you're like a smart, like you know you have some tact and adaptability and like whatever, and like so the middle of the road thing sort of helps with that, but they fundamentally people want to make a deal with someone that they like, right. Whether it's in TV, whether it's in anything, you know, so if I'm fettered in like revealing enough interesting things about myself to, or like, you know, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be just about me, but just in general, like if that's a limitation, then I think that can be, a problem. So the first of all, I tend to go a little bit in the middle of the road because I do like, I in order to like not cause offense or like be likable or something like that, which I think sometimes has the opposite effect of being like a little bit bland, you know? But the other thing is I do have
I'd never say bland.
I do have a little bit of a like, worry about, you know, being a lady and, you know, and not, you know, particularly like in a donor setting where it's like a lot of like, maybe like older white people about like presentability stuff.
Absolutely.
So I get a little bit worried about, cause like I have a very, very foul mouth normally. And so then sometimes, you know, so I don't, you know, I don't really like, I obviously censor myself cause I have some decorum,
yeah.
but you know, like, and just like sort of the way that I might normally like fire back about something, I wouldn't do that because, and especially because also like I my presentation, sometimes I don't really have as like the type of wardrobe to look super like at you know, totally camouflage in an Upper West Side apartment or Upper East Side apartment. So I feel like I kind of have to do a little extra, like, you know, I mean, I got like, you know, I had not for nothing, like a few people like order drinks from me last night. So like, I mean, that'll happen and
yeah,
that's fine. But like it
order drinks from you.
Yeah.
Oh, like you walked up and they're like, can I get a Chardonnay? Because
I was like, I was standing by the bar, but it was like, there was another like woman of color who was actually the maid who works at the apartment.
Oh.
And I was like standing next to her.
Oh.
You know, and so I kind of sometimes feel like I have to like be a little bit, you know, more conservative to.
Well, I think that's true.
Yeah.
I should have prefaced this by saying I'm talking about what you're talking about, a role that you play when you're representing an organization, mm-hmm. or a job, which is different than you're representing when we're representing ourselves.
Yeah.
So maybe that's where, like, because there haven't been a lot of times, like, it's only now that we really go into meeting and things, and it's like,
and they want to know
who we are. Right. It's not like,
well, but I guess my point is more that I'm trying to learn how to flip that switch of going between, like, what role am I playing here? Oh, actually, the role I'm playing is the role of myself, and, like, please like me. Yeah. Please like me.
Or don't.
But this is what it is.
This is what the product is.
Yeah. But I think also part of that is this exactly what we've just been talking about this whole time about performance anxiety and, like, being present and, like, responding to, like, rather than, because I often, like, prepare a lot for conversations to sort of, like, pump myself up for, like, you know, having to interact with other humans or whatever. And then, but rather than, like, it's a sort of the same principle as being ready to improv in an audition or a performance versus,
isn't it?
Because it's like, because you actually want to respond to what the person is giving you. But then sometimes I out of nerves will just sort of revert to, like, the thing that I prepared to talk about, even if it's, like, not quite, like, in step what's actually happening.
I mean, you're very articulate and quick, so you can sort of bridge that.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I mean,
but
I don't want to make it sound like I'm a total like social moron or anything. Like, you know, I have my moments, but we all do. but yeah, no, I do very much wish I could, like, be myself, quote unquote, with more ease in these types of meetings, especially, like, in the creative sphere where we are trying to convince people.
You can and you will, but notice, like, a certain.
It's something I'm working on, and it's just, like, related to so many different things. It's about being present, being mindful, whatever, and also just about, like, standing up straight and not letting, you know.
Or, like, laughing when something's funny. Your laugh is very charming. It's weird when something funny happens and you don't laugh.
Oh, my God. What?
It only happens in, like, business meetings with, like, where I just feel like a quiet concentration come over you.
Yes.
And so, like, he'll be, like, next to me on my right or left, and I'll just feel like this person, like,
oh no,
like, we're at a, like, in a, like, in a different sort of meeting, like, we're in a production meeting or something.
I want to give you the energy that you can bounce off of in that setting. So
right, because there was sometimes, like, you'll let me part of our rapport is talking over each other sometimes, mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. and
frequent listeners will have observed,
you know, phenomenon. Finishing a thought that, like, we know the other person's gonna, like, moving towards, but maybe they're, like, lost in, like, a bunch of words, or, like, okay, you're trying to say this, and then, like, we, you know, and that's just, like, part of our dynamic. And sometimes in professional meetings, you're, like, letting me finish a whole thought, and I'm like, girl, you need to jump in here.
Life,
like,
line.
Not that I can't do it.
Yeah.
But, like, come on. Okay. Can you edit me in real time? Just, like, help a girl out. Jump in here.
Which I can. Know? I can and I do in most settings. So, point.
Which is, like, I must say, like, being part of a duo partnership, part of me is, like, I couldn't imagine doing something like this by myself.
I know. I wouldn't. You solo creatives out there, God bless.
Actually, I'll give a script. I can imagine doing it, but I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
I just wanted to bring up this idea to you.
If you had to, I thank you and I appreciate that, and I take that in the good, like, whatever, like, the good intention that it is offered. But I ask you, what do you feel like are some tips for me? If you can think of any. What should I be doing? What can I be doing?
Oh, I guess that's a little hard. Other than just, like, not...
Get out of my head. Get out of my ass.
Yeah, or concentrate more on our dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
What we are trying to say together than
what the person wants to
hear.
The
person's energy is.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, another advantage of being two against whatever, even if it's a room full of people, more than one person, like, it goes back to an original point of, like, they might be stone-faced. Mm-hmm. They might be in suits. Mm-hmm. They might be doing whatever. But we have to remember that there's no sort of deal that we want to make with people where we have to turn around and be like, oh, I know you liked us in that meeting, but that wasn't who we were at all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So just like, just kind of not so much pretending they're not there, but in a sense, just us just like doing our things.
And that means when something's funny,
you laugh. Yeah. When like I say something that you feel needs clarification, you just jump on top of me and do it, or vice versa. Or like even sometimes, like if I say something, you say something, and I'm like, and I say, well, I think more we're trying to really say this, or we don't agree. It's fine to disagree in front of people. Right. Like, you know. Yeah, like yeah. I think maybe we overthink. Overthink <You think>? It.
I think that overthinking is like part of our brand. we've made like a hobby and an art form out of navel gazing.
Mm-hmm. When did you get moved?
And a lot has. It is helpful. It's helpful, but once you're done with the navel gazing, your navel has been sufficiently gazed at, you then have to go out into the world and do a thing. So that's where we're at.
So I just encourage you to think about it and have no fear about people seeing who you really are.
Okay.
Or like offending people.
That sentence was just my like 2020 goals in a nutshell. And it's really
And, like, in fact, push it. I mean, we should both push it. It's like, that's who we are. Like, I have moments where, like, I sense that someone's, like, not disapproving, but not disapproving. Like, I don't know where they are.
Right.
And I'm truly fine with that. I haven't always been, but, like, lately it's like, oh, man, that person might not like me. And
yeah. I think you have actually gone on a journey.
Or, like,
this.
Not... really like what I just said.
I like that. I like that. That's our goal. That's our storyline for this year.
Yeah. So I ordered essentials that added up to like $100, let's say. And I don't have Amazon Prime. And so they come when they come because I choose free shipping and I'm not in a hurry. So I get like a package here.
I mean, no, we should all quit Amazon. But also, if you want to use my Amazon Prime. In the
I know. My brother has one, too. I just don't.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Because I don't need something like next day.
It's like you just have to be, you know, you can use mine. As I've said, you can use mine. You just can't judge my search history in the way that a friend of ours will remain nameless. She was trying to show me something on her Amazon and she was like, oh, my God, like, just don't comment on the suggested things for me. And I like scrolled down and it was like a bunch of like technicolored wigs and then like a butt plug that had a jewel, like a gem on the end, like a big, like Sailor Moon style, like scepter. And I was like, well, now that you said that, of course I went and looked at it. And she's like, seriously, well, like, we're not talking about this. So, so Amazon history can really say a lot about a person, but I would be willing to expose that to you. My search history.
Well,
if you need it.
I received my package yesterday and I was like, ooh, what did I get?
Yeah, what did
I
forget? It was like Windex or something.
Yes. Yeah. It was like Windex, lotion, a new laundry bag for the laundromat.
Mm-hmm. Well, you need to maybe sneak in like a little nice thing when you order
something. So I was disappointed in something that I ordered myself. But I'm like, man, I spent $100 and all I got was lotion and a laundry bag. You know?
Well, that's how I feel every time I go to the grocery store and I'm like, I spent $75.
I spent $70 last week. You know what I have in my refrigerator?
Nothing.
3 eggs. Oh, I made a real mistake last night. I ordered pizza.
Okay. None of this sounds like a mistake yet.
This is the second time in a row that I've misordered pizza in my neighborhood. I don't have great pizza options.
I think it might be the same thing that I did very early on in this apartment.
Which is what?
Did you accidentally order Sicilian?
No, I accidentally ordered a vodka pizza. But get this. Pasta on the pizza.
No.
So penne alla vodka on pizza. I was really hungry. Okay, I got it. I took it upstairs.
That is not your fault. That is the fault of this.
Who fucking makes pizza? You and I, we took a road trip across the country. We had our fair share of bad pizza experiences outside of.
Yes, which we've been so traumatized by that we still talk about with some frequency.
So, but I got the pizza upstairs. I opened it up and it was penne pasta on top of pizza. And I just stood there defeated.
Well, did you eat it?
Yeah, I ate two slices because I was hungry. Mm-hmm. I made spinach on the side because, you know, I needed some sort of vegetable. But I couldn't eat it like a pizza because it was pasta on a pizza.
Right. So you had to eat it with a fork. So I had to eat
pasta off the pizza.
That's just ridiculous. That's ridiculous. That's criminal.
And I don't think I can finish it.
Well, I'm curious to try the slice, even though it sounds really bad. There was actually, so I was never a fan of the slice, but there was like a famous pizza place. It was actually really the only pizza place in my college town. And they had a famous slice that was like tortellini on top of pizza. And I was like, why would anyone want that? That's so gross. They also had another one that made me feel really bad that I never tried, which was like a deconstructed taco pizza. But the thing that was like real, you know, which sounds like, okay, maybe that could be okay. The thing that was disgusting about it was that there was shredded lettuce on the pizza. Ugh, is that disgusting? Yeah. And, you know, I don't love lettuce as a baseline anyway.
Yeah, me neither. That is, I don't know, a conspiracy, something. We've been brainwashed to think that lettuce on a sandwich is good. I'll take that back. But lettuce as a salad.
Unless it's a wedge salad.
Unless it's a wedge
salad. There are loopholes. There are loopholes.
Yes, there are.
That's another thing, another really positive thing that you've brought into my life. Is
wedge
vacuuming
salads.
And an appreciation of wedge salads, which makes you sound like a country club housewife.
Like from the 50s.
Like I said, it's among the many gifts you brought to my life.
Oh my. Okay, and I'll have one other quick
thing.
Hole.
Hole. Tell me about your quick hole. Sorry. Get yourself together.
Oh, now I forgot it. You made me laugh.
You can subscribe to us anywhere you listen to podcasts and find us at vijayandstevens.com. That's V-I-J-A-Y and Stevens with a P-H. We're working on some scripts and some fun new live projects. You can find us at VJ and Stevens on Instagram, and our assistant Susan now tweets at Memos from Susan.